Good morning. I will ask the marshal to call us into session one more time and call the case, and then I'll have just a few remarks before we start the arguments.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bradfold, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bryan, the Honorable Diane B. Bradfold presiding. Now calling Eric F. Netter versus Shauna L. Reich. Case number A201112.
And good morning. Today's date is February 10th, 2021, and we are resuming arguments. This is the second of three oral arguments that we have today, and we have two additional cases for a total of five on our calendar today. So I see the council are here and present. I just want to do a quick sound check and make sure that everyone is able to. I assume that you can hear me. Maybe you can nod your heads and let me know that. Okay, very good. And then I'll check first with Mr. Parker. Your sound is good, I believe.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Excellent. Good morning. And then with you, Mr. Wolf.
Good morning, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
I sure can. All right. Very good. So our thanks to both lawyers. We are, of course, conducting this argument by Zoom today. And other than that, though, our procedures remain the same. And if you have any questions about that, let us know. If you have any connection problems, I know that you have a plan for reconnecting. So before you start your remarks today, please identify yourself for the record as well as the client you represent. These matters are recorded and the recording is maintained so that we have a record of our argument, but it's an oral recording, so it helps us if you identify yourself. And with that, I think we are ready to proceed. Keep your eye on the clock to both lawyers. It tends to go rather quickly. Counsel for appellant, Mr. Parker, you can begin when you're ready.
good morning. May it please the court, Judge Bradfold, Judge Bryan, and Judge Bjorkman. I am Boris Parker, attorney for the appellant in this matter, Shauna L. Reich. Before the court is the review of a rather short order confirming an arbitrator's final award. That order is dated July 27, 2020. And was issued by Judge Austin. What we're here to request from this court is an interpretation and a remand back to the district court of the decision by the district court to basically ignore or avoid an analysis of the arbitrator's decision based on her understanding that as long as an arbitrator acts within the scope of the issues presented to him or her in arbitration, that arbitrator is deemed not to exceed his or her powers. And we would submit respectfully to this court that that interpretation of the Arbitration Act provision with respect to a basis for vacating an award was construed extremely narrowly by the court and incorrectly. The standard for review for this court is de novo with respect to the district court's decision on the motion from the respondent to confirm and our motion to vacate the award. The statutory interpretation with respect to the Arbitration Act provision is also reviewed de novo by this court. And lastly, this court conducts an independent review of the record in light of the relevant law to determine if the court did in fact reach a proper legal conclusion with respect to the interpretation of the language in the Arbitration Act regarding the arbitrator exceeding his powers.
Mr. Parker, I just want to confirm a couple of things with you. Do you agree that the dispute between the parties is subject to arbitration pursuant to Section 10 of the Declaration of Covenants?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, we made a motion to remove the matter to arbitration.
All right. And so your argument, as I understand it, boils down to one, that if an arbitrator's decision misapplies controlling law, it is outside the scope of her authority. Is that what you're arguing?
Well, Your Honor, you know, here's historically, we bought the precedent was, or at least there was some precedent regarding what used to be referred to as manifest disregard of the law. Then we had the enactment, we had some Supreme Court decisions, we had this state, court's rule that the standard then changed, and we looked to the act. There's nothing right now for counsel, for judges, to really understand what the scope of exceeding his or her powers means. I would submit to you that exceeding the power of the arbitrator under the act would include applying law in a manner inconsistent with this court or the Supreme Court of the state.
Then what's the point of arbitration? I mean, arbitration is supposed to be different, isn't it? I mean, it is supposed to be a type of procedure that is outside of the court's jurisdiction for the most part. And so there is finality to it. The parties contract to not have review of legal decisions, don't they?
No, Your Honor, absolutely not. So take an example. What if the arbitrator is completely wrong, as he is in this case? What is the recourse for a party in an arbitration to make sure that there's some kind of, there needs to be some kind of uniformity, some precedent, some consistency in the arbitration? We're not arguing, you know, if we take it, let's say, no-fault arbitration, and I go to arbitrate with an insurer because the value of my roof is in dispute, okay? Whether we're replacing a portion of it or the whole roof or the value, and the arbitrator attributes a dollar amount. That is a discretion and a determination that's within the arbitrator's powers. When the arbitrator takes the, you know, it, let's say, ignores a contractual provision or applies the law of this state in a manner that is completely inconsistent with how the application of this court, then that's why we have a review process under the Arbitration Act for the district court to make the analysis both on the legal or the as a matter of law and from a factual standpoint.
Mr. Parker, I'm a little puzzled by that because it seems like we have held multiple times that the state Supreme Court has held multiple times under the state Arbitration Act that you do not set aside an award for a mistake of law. You do not set aside an award for disagreeing with the way that the arbitrator applied the law or even a contractual interpretation. As long as, quote, it draws its essence from the contract, we are in some ways unable to review that decision by the arbitrator, that the scope of review or the standard of review is not de novo. It really is much more narrow and extremely deferential, even on application of law. And that's the state Arbitration Act. So it seems like what you're arguing is directly contrary to that.
I'm not arguing directly contrary to that, Your Honor. What I'm arguing is that we cannot, the cases that you cite, none of those cases indicate that this court lacks authority to review or overturn a misapplication of the arbitrator's decision if it's and I keep going this term manifestly disregard, but if it's contrary to the legal precedent of this state, if the decision is clearly wrong legally, okay? And if we look at that at the terms of the contract, let's say, let's look at the easement provision, right? So he's interpreting the easement provision in the declaration, section 4E, right? So that's within the scope of the contract. If we follow that argument of the legal precedent within that state, within our state, that's a clear misinterpretation. First of all, he doesn't even, you know, he says it's unambiguous, right? The language is unambiguous, and then but then he doesn't apply it in a manner that is unambiguous and consistent.
Okay. So again, I'm trying to get back to the legal standard and the cases that have looked at this issue before ours. And I'm quoting from a Minnesota case. So this isn't, I'll get to the way that the Supreme Court has interpreted the FAA provision regarding exceeding the scope as a basis to vacate. I'll get to that in a minute, but this is still related to Minnesota, interpreting Minnesota law. An arbitrator's award will be upheld as long as it draws its essence from the agreement and that it's outside of, we do not vacate an award because we think the arbitrator misinterpreted the contract. So, but that's exactly what you're saying here we should do. So I'm curious as to what it is about this case that would be different, or maybe you're asking us to, and you just need to come out and say it, you're asking us to revive manifest disregard.
Well, I'm not asking you to revive manifest disregard, but in the case that, and I don't know specifically which case you're citing, there's several cases, and some, if it's a case that deals with no fault arbitration, for instance, it's different from what we're dealing with here. And the question is to determine if the contract that we're dealing with says easement, can an arbitrator then say this is not an easement? You know, and apply it and apply it differently. So it's within the parameters of the arbitration clause that we're working with. That the issue is not, you know, the issue really is it's kind of an interesting. There's a two-step process here, right? We're here to review the judge's order. The question for this court initially is: did the judge correctly state that my scope of review is limited only to the fact whether or not the issue is before the arbitrator? We're analyzed. And if this issue was before the court or the arbitrator and analyzed, I can't do anything with it. And our position is that's not what the intent of the legislature was. And we have to look at the intent of the statute, and this court has to look at what the legislature intended with respect to section 572B, 0.23 sub 4. Right? What is the scope of that language? What does it mean when an arbitrator exceeds his power? And
Mr. Parker, if I could, before we get too far down this road, I do want to ask your opinion about whether the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation of basically the same language in terms of a basis to vacate under the FAA, whether that precedent should be persuasive to us. And I'll come back to something that Judge Bjorkman had asked, and that is, it seems that the Supreme Court has a view that when you reach an arbitration agreement, the thing that you are agreeing to arbitrate is you are agreeing to the arbitrator's construction of the contract. That's what's bargained for. And that's the basis for then the Supreme Court saying things like grave error is not enough. A grave legal error is not enough to vacate an award. As long as the arbitrator's decision concerns construction of the contract, this is a direct quote, the courts have no business overruling the arbitrator because their interpretation of the contract is different from his. The arbitrator's construction holds, however good, bad, or ugly. Why is that not persuasive for us as we're interpreting the same language under the Minnesota Act?
Because there's nothing to construe in this contract if the language is unambiguous. You're supposed to apply the language of the contract, not construe it. The fact that the arbitrator was construing unambiguous language and placing his own interpretation on that language is where the error lies. And that's one of the main differences what the scope of the cases are that you're citing relates to the deference to the factual determinations, much like their discretion to the district court.
No, with all due respect, that's not true. What I'm citing are cases that look at the legal application, that a grave error in applying law is not enough to vacate the award. And you might disagree with that. And you might be able to persuade us to disagree with. And that's kind of what I'm asking. Are you, in fact, asking us to revive the manifest disregard doctrine or basis? Because that is, it sounds like that's what you're saying.
You know, I'm not necessarily asking that be revived, but the way I have you know, we kind of scoured the same, you know, landscape of case law and precedent on this issue. And what I'm trying to indicate to you is that, you know, I think there isn't clarity. And so it's hard for me to indicate to you one way or another, but my interpretation of how I've read the very same cases you're citing to is that it didn't foreclose completely that a, let's say, clear error by the arbitrator in the application of the law or an act by the arbitrator, which in effect creates new law, is not reviewable under any circumstances by a district court or the appellate court. And that's why I'm trying to indicate to you that this, you know, the arbitrator's award is not, you know, absolute in and of itself. There is, it may be very narrow, but there is a scope of review by the district court and by the appellate court that is allowed and has to be allowed. Otherwise, we're going to have completely absurd decisions. So we cannot have the arbitrator in this case specifically acted in the role of the judge based on the November 2019 order, which set the scope of.
But Mr. Parker, the parties agreed that an arbitrator would be the judge in this case. I mean, that's what I keep being, that's what troubles me. And I don't think the case law allows you a do-over in the sense that you would have a de novo review of a district court decision on the merits by this court. Why am I wrong about that?
Well, I will agree with you that it's not an automatic do-over or automatic review, but where there's clear disregard for the law and clear misapplication, the district court has the right to step in, and we would submit to you that's under the provision in the Arbitration Act that provides for such review where an arbitrator exceeded the powers. So the question is, should the district court even looked at it? And our position and what we're requesting from this court is to indicate that yes, that the court should have taken a closer look at it and at least followed through on that analysis. Instead, it chose a very narrow scope.
Mr. Parker, I'm just going to remind you briefly that your time is up for your opening remarks, but you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Would you like to conclude your sentence? As I'm happy to let you do that.
I'm happy to rest unless there's any further questions and finish up on rebuttal.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And so we'll wait just a moment. There we go. Mr. Wolf, the clock has been reset. So when you're ready, counsel for a respondent, you can begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jonathan Wolf. I am here representing the respondents. I will note for the record that Eric Netter has passed away during the pendency of these proceedings. Ms. Netter is in fact sitting in the next room observing, and then the rest of the respondents are continue to be interested in this matter as well. I'm just going to start by saying I've been doing this a lot longer than my hopefully youthful appearance may indicate, and this case really takes the cake for me. I can't imagine, it astounds me that we're even here for many of the reasons that Your Honor's brought up in the opening argument here. This should not be an appeal. I can't believe that we're sitting here. I believe I heard a little bit of the argument in the previous case, and it was about a person's freedom. Those are the things that should be taking up the time of the Court of Appeals. This is about a dock. You know, we didn't get into the...
Well, I mean, if I could, Mr. Wolf, it's also about the Arbitration Act and how you apply it. And it isn't completely crystal clear if you look at the history. And so I think it's fair to have discussions like this about what the limitations might be for an arbitrator. And even if you know, Mr. Parker didn't come out and say it, so I'm not going to hold him to it, but it wouldn't be even out of place, I don't think, for someone to argue that there should be an additional basis recognized by this court or by the state Supreme Court to vacate an award that isn't in the statute. So I don't think it's completely absurd that we're here or anything like that at all. I think it's fair grounds to be here, and I hope that you'd be able to address some of those bases and explain to us why you think that this is within the bounds of what arbitrators are permitted to do and why that's clearly set out in our law, whether that's case law or statute.
Your Honor, and that's fair enough. Anyone can go up and challenge the Arbitration Act or any other statute. But what I didn't see in any of the briefing and what I didn't hear in the oral argument, how did this arbitrator allegedly misapply the law? What law was supposedly misapplied? I think the only thing I saw in the brief was this, frankly, absurd argument that there can't be an easement over water, which we agree to. The district court agrees there can't be an easement over water. The arbitrator agreed there can't be an easement over water. What there can be is riparian rights, riparian access, which the appellant agreed to provide by being a party to the declaration. So what confuses me about this appeal is that I didn't see anything other than that, which is very earth real when you look at it with a little bit of scrutiny. What I didn't see is any way that the appellant was alleging the arbitrator actually misapplied the law. And as Your Honor pointed out, the arbitrator doesn't necessarily have to follow the law. Arbitrators are empowered to resolve disputes. The parties agreed to resolve this dispute through arbitration. In fact, appellant was the one who compelled arbitration. And she didn't like the results, frankly, is why we're here. But that doesn't give you the right to overturn an arbitration award because the result isn't what you liked. This was said in the brief, but I think it's important to quote it. This language from the Aaron v. Illinois Farmers Insurance Group case, quote, "An appeal from an arbitration decision is subject to an extremely narrow standard of review, and the reviewing court must exercise every reasonable presumption in favor of the arbitration award's finality and validity." Now, that doesn't mean that every arbitration award ever just automatically gets confirmed, but it does mean you need to come up with a pretty substantial problem with the arbitrator, something like, I don't know, racial bias, or I mean, you have to come up with something more than we just didn't like the outcome of the decision. Certainly you have to come up with more than you can't have an easement over water and the arbitrator says, yeah, I agree, you can't. And the district court says, yeah, we agree, you can't. And the other party says, yeah, we agree, you can't. That's not a reason for overturning the basis of this award.
Mr. Wolf, let me ask you this. I mean, do you agree with the appellant's suggestion that there is a point at which misapplication of the law kind of crosses a line and can be equated with the arbitrator exceeding her authority? Do you acknowledge that that's a possibility?
Absolutely, Your Honor, I acknowledge that. But
where does the line get crossed and why wouldn't we reach the conclusion that in this case that line was crossed?
What an excellent question, Your Honor. I would love to know where the line is crossed, and I would depend on appellant to tell us, but I didn't see that. I mean, where does it get crossed hypothetically? I mean, boy, we can sit here and imagine hypotheticals that are just so outside the bounds of common sense that it would cross the line. But I think an arbitrator is empowered to make a reasonable decision, whether it comports with the law or not. And I frankly don't know how to respond to a non-argument. How do you respond and say, well, the arbitrator didn't cross the line here when appellant has pointed out no way in which the arbitrator supposedly misapplied the law?
Mr. Wolf, so, let me be more precise, I think, because we're talking about interpreting a contract and there's lots of law about what rules you would apply to construct and interpret contractual provisions. So if an arbitrator were to disregard one of our fundamental rules of construction or interpretation in looking at a contract, would that cross the line in your opinion?
In my opinion, Your Honor, no, not necessarily. I think, as you pointed out, the case law is pretty clear that an arbitrator, when you agree to arbitration, is empowered to interpret the contract, just like a district court would be empowered to interpret the contract. Now, this contract was fairly unambiguous. It said there is an easement over Outlot C for access to the water for riparian rights, and the parties agree that they will all have riparian rights. It doesn't say they agree there will be an easement over water. It says we agree to the easement over Outlot C, which is a piece of land, and we agree for riparian access. So conceivably, could there be an arbitration where the arbitrator so wildly misinterpreted the contract that confirmation of that award would be overturnable? I suppose conceivably, but I can't understand how it can even be argued that this is that case. I mean, the language of the declaration is pretty black and white. These outlot seat co-owners get riparian access. That's exactly what the arbitrator found. And the arbitrator made a reasonable decision to allow for that to happen for all of the outlot seat owners, including appellant. So, you know, is there a conceivable situation where an arbitrator could go so off the rails that they could be overturned? Yes, I don't see how that is this. Does that answer your question, Your Honor? Okay, I'll continue here. So as we've covered, our arbitrators don't necessarily have to follow law. I think the question is, really, was the arbitrator reasonable? And I think unquestionably this arbitrator was. Now, the district court didn't just completely rubber stamp this. The district court issued a pretty substantial order going through the arbitrator's award and saying, here's what the arbitrator did right. Counsel didn't really get into this in his oral argument, but I noticed in the briefing we had this argument over arbitrability, or the word is a controversy arbitrable. The district court almost verbatim quoted that language from a controlling case. And I just don't think there's any question that language simply means does an arbitrator have the power to decide this dispute? The briefing kind of went over this question of, well, the question is, did the arbitrator exceed his or her powers? And another way of stating that is the issue arbitrable? I don't really know what to say about that other than that you can look at the case law and look at the almost direct quote the district court made from the case law and kind of determine for yourself what that word arbitrable means. To me, it means, was it within the district or was it within the arbitrator's power to decide? I think quite clearly it was. Factually here, I think underlying the award, we have to look at what were these parties intending to do when they signed on this declaration. The language of the declaration says exactly the result that the arbitrator reached. It says these parties are agreeing they're going to have access throughout Lot C to use the dock for riparian use, for fishing, swimming, all the things people use a dock for. I don't know why these parties would have signed on to a declaration that essentially said appellant gets access over the shared outlot and this riparian use and nobody else does. It doesn't make sense. I don't see how conceivably an arbitrator could have reached that result or how the district court could have reached that result if this hadn't been an arbitration. So while we're sitting here discussing legitimate questions of what are an arbitrator's powers, you know, what is the standard of review when we look at a district court's confirmation of an arbitration award, I also think it's important to look at what is the substantive judgment of the arbitrator underlying this award. Could the arbitrator have reached any other result than the one that he did in fact reach? I mean, not under the language of this declaration. Parties who put an outlot specifically to allow all of them to have riparian access want exactly that. This really boils down to a pretty simple case of people sharing an outlot, all of them wanting to use that to access the water, to use their riparian rights, and the arbitrator allowing for that. The district court confirmed it. I haven't seen any allegation that the law, that the arbitrator made his decision in violation of any laws or contrary to any laws, even though, as we've talked about, he would have been empowered to do so, other than this, you can't have an easement over water, which the declaration didn't purport to do, nor did the arbitrator, nor did the district court, nor do we. You have riparian access rights. The arbitrator granted them, and here we are. I can go on. It doesn't seem like your honors have really any questions. I've never ended a court of appeals argument with time remaining, but I just don't know that there is more to say on this. So unless one of you has a question for me, I think I'm going to cede my remaining time.
Are there any questions for the panel? So thank you, Mr. Wolf. And of course, we have your full briefing on this. So don't take our silence for lack of interest. It is simply that we're listening carefully to the way in which you amplify the position you've already explained in your brief.
Thank you.
And so with that, I think the clock has been reset. And Mr. Parker, we're ready for 5 minutes of rebuttal if you choose.
Thank you. I think based on the argument from counsel that you just heard, it's clear that there's significant confusion and necessary guidance that we need from this court on this particular issue. The district, you just heard counsel agree that the provisions are unambiguous. Then there is no room for the arbitrator, right, to interpret them other than as stated. And the provision as stated indicates it's an easement. If it's an easement, it can't be granted over water. So the arbitrator, in his decision, just made new law by granting an easement over our clients, Lakeshore. Okay, so that's why we're here. We made that argument in the brief. Counsel argues about riparian rights. There's nothing related to riparian rights in the declaration.
Mr. Parker talks
about easements. Yes, ma'am.
I guess I don't understand your easement over water argument. As I understand the easements, they run over the easement runs over the land, over lot, outlet C, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's one of the easements, yes.
Well, it's the easement that's at issue, right? Is whether they can put the dock out that they want. I mean, your client, as I understand it, pardon me, maybe you could help me with the record. If I'm looking at the addendum, and I don't know if you have access to that or not.
Sure. Yes, I do.
Page 36, I think that's the dock that your client constructed in front of her own lot. Is that correct?
At page 36 of the addendum, just 1 second. That is the Outlot C dock, Your Honor. That's the original dock on Outlot C.
Okay. And then the next page, I think, is the expanded Outlet C dock from 2017-18. At that point, your client didn't have her own dock coming from her own property, correct?
Correct.
She doesn't have an easement on her own lot. And so I'm trying to understand how the arbitrator's decision permitting, I guess, or recognizing the validity of the reconfigured dock that's erected from Outlet C, how that interferes with your client's property rights.
Well, because the language in section 4E of the declaration talks about a crossover from Outlet C in front of the lakeshore of our client's Lot 6. And that is in the language that relies on is an easement. It says there's an easement for crossover. It has nothing to do with riparian rights. And even the riparian rights, we can get into a whole argument about that. That crossover wouldn't be proper based on riparian rights either. It's a very narrow, it's a different analysis, very narrow. And I've got a minute 40 of my time and I'm not gonna try to get into it. But the point I was trying to make is that this language in the declaration is unambiguous. Counsel just admitted it. It should have been interpreted as such. It was not. It was interpreted as something else, as a contractual provision that allows for riparian access. It's not. It's an easement. An easement over water is invalid as a matter of law. So our arguments with respect to the errors by the arbitrator have been very clearly stated, both in the brief and the reply. The only reliance by the respondents in the court on legal precedent for the decision was the Liberty Mutual Insurance Company case. The court issued two sentences the first sentence says, when a party moves to vacate an arbitration award on the ground that the arbitrator exceeded his powers, which is what we're arguing here today, the only question reviewable is whether the arbitrator addressed an arbitratable issue. That is wrong. And this court needs to indicate that that's wrong based on what we've been discussing today. The window may be very narrow, but there's still a window and an opportunity for review beyond whether or not this is an arbitratable issue, okay? And that when in looking at the Liberty Mutual case, that was a case that the only issue before the court or this appellate court was whether or not there were, the arbitrator had authority to decide the issue that, that he decided, which is totally different from what we're arguing here. We're not arguing whether the issue was properly before the arbitrator. We're arguing there's no dispute that this is unambiguous language and it says easement. And we know by Minnesota law, you cannot have easement over water. And he enforced it. And the district court says, you know what? I'm powerless to do anything about it. So we're here before the appellate court to indicate that that is a incorrect determination. The district court is not powerless, that there is a narrow window and an opportunity to review manifest, whether it's manifest disregard of the law, whether the court wants to bring back that standard. We would not argue against it. But if the court would interpret this particular provision in the Arbitration Act to provide the proper guidance.
So, Mr. Parker, I just want to point out that your time has lapsed. Now, did you want to complete your sentence? I'm happy to let you do that.
If I may, Your Honor.
Go right ahead.
Okay. This court needs to provide the proper guidance with respect to the legislative intent in the provision and the language in subsection 4 regarding an arbitrator exceeding his powers. We as attorneys and judges need it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our thanks to both lawyers in this case. This matter is now submitted to the court for its decision. Very interesting question, and we very much appreciate your arguments, both written and oral today. Now, when I say that this matter is submitted to us for a decision, I want to let you know that we will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe. So with that, we've concluded arguments on the second matter on our calendar.